Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape variety.
To meet a global bartending legend.
That's probably the gin that will open doors for us on the export market.
Great single malt whiskey is made in the brewery.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
Exploded onto the Australian brewing scene.
Gin is such a fun way to be able to talk to people about different produce.
Start focusing on the main ingredient of beer, which is water.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Welcome to a special episode of Drinks Adventures as we welcome to the podcast Julio Bermejo. In 1990, at the restaurant founded by his parents in San Francisco, Julio conceived what ultimately became known as the Tommy's Margarita, one of only 16 cocktails that have been officially recognized as new era drinks by the International Bartenders Association. Under Julio's influence, Tommy's Mexican restaurant moved towards a singular focus on 100% agave tequilas, as opposed to what are known as mixto tequilas, in which distillers supplement the agave with cheaper sugars. This crusade brought global recognition for Tommy's as the world's leading tequila bar, honored 6 times in the world's 50 best bars list since 2000. Julio was in Australia recently to judge the Patron Perfectionist cocktail competition, and thanks to Patron Tequila, I was able to catch up with him to record this interview at Tio's in Sydney that I'm delighted to share with Drinks Adventures listeners. But first, a word from our sponsor. Tommy's Restaurant was founded by Julio Bermejo's parents, Tommy and Elmi, in 1965.
First, in the United States, there are several kinds of licenses, like everywhere, for alcohol. You can have a beer and wine license or a hard spirit license. We had a beer and wine license, and then we got our hard spirit license in the mid to late 70s. When I start to take an interest in tequila and in the margarita is when our bar starts to change. So we switch over to 100% agave. And right then and there, it was just so radical, the flavor profile change, that there was no more room for regular tequila in my life or, in my opinion, in the lives of my guests. The argument of the industry had always been the American consumer does not understand 100% agave because it has a taste that's too unique for them. And what a bunch of bullshit. And I started to stock as many 100% agave products as I could, and we went from 3 or 4 to 24, to 48, 60, 80, right? And then eventually, largest finished selection of tequila in the world, blah, 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 representing more distilleries than any other bar in the United States. And that became the focus.
Alongside Tommy's move to 100% agave tequila, Julio turned his attentions to another ingredient in the margarita cocktail. There were several iterations of what eventually became known as the Tommy's Margarita, in which Julio replaced the triple sec orange liqueur in the original recipe with agave syrup to further accentuate the flavor of the tequila.
We, as in our family, our staff, myself at Tommy's, never called the margarita that we made the Tommy's Margarita. I didn't go out and go, today I'm going to make a better margarita. It started out as we use this product in our margarita, and is that what we should be doing? Remember, agave fructose was incredibly expensive, so the iterations were finding out what worked, right? And what worked economically, because, you know, we only raised the drink price 50 cents, which is crazy, right? When bottle costs went from $5 to $19 a liter. And so when I take that step and stop selling regular tequila, it was an insane idea. I mean, if I had been working in a corporate environment, I would have been fired, 2 seconds after making that decision.
And what did your father say to you at that point?
You're fucking crazy. I mean, yeah, I want to kill you. But it worked out. It was the right thing to do. And now, luckily, you know, we started something in San Francisco that many people have emulated, and that's great. But also, San Francisco today is arguably, after Mexico, the most sophisticated tequila market in the world. And we are, and we're part of that.
How do you think that became such an iconic cocktail?
It took two bartenders. It took Dre Musso and Henry Besant, who had started a consultancy company called the Worldwide Cocktail Club in London, to go all over the world and say, you know, when it comes to making the margarita that should be made is a Tommy's margarita. When I start working in London in 2001, I started giving seminars to London's best bartenders, and I was blown away by the fact that these people were asking me questions that were never asked for in America. For example, hey, I want to make a cocktail with some fresh basil. You know, what kind of tequila would you recommend? And I'm like, okay, let me think about that, right? Then when I met these people in England, I decided to start taking professional tours to visit distilleries. Then when we took them to Mexico, it kind of made everything fit. And a lot of those people became true agave lovers and tequila lovers. In fact, to the degree that Henry and Dre opened up Mexican restaurants, wrote books about Mexican cocktails.
You had quite an effect on people then.
Well, it looks like we did. It looks like we did, but the important thing was just sharing something that really hadn't been fully understood and still to this day isn't fully understood and honestly underappreciated. I mean, if tequila was made in France, I could not afford to drink it. It'd be $500 a bottle.
And was there a point when the Tommy's kind of got so much traction that your dad sort of went, okay, I can kind of see what you did there?
Well, here's a funny story. So in 1999 was the first time I was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And I was, so the Wall Street Journal does two fun columns. The right-hand column is just fun. The far left-hand column is fun, but it's serious. So it's a business trend. And I was on the left-hand column. And there it said, Tommy's epicenter of tequila in the United States. So now, when this article came out in 1999, in April of 1999, or May of 1999, I happened to be in New Orleans for Jazz Fest that I attend every year. It's my vacation. And I'm walking down Canal Street, and a friend of mine just goes, hey, Olio, did you get the Wall Street Journal today? I mean, I never buy the Wall Street Journal. I don't have any money, right? Why am I buying the journal? And I go, no, of course not. He goes, well, you ought to get it. Like, all right, whatever. So I go to a five-star hotel, and I steal a Wall Street Journal. I'm not fucking paying for one, right? So I get the Wall Street Journal. I go, I'm on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. So anyway, I go enjoy Jazz Fest, and I come back home to my father, and I go, Dad, we're on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. And my father put down his newspaper, and he goes, where were you? No, I was in New Orleans. What were you doing there? Oh, it was Jazz Fest. I mean, I heard some of the greatest music in the world. My father goes, how many margaritas did you sell over there? None. How many enchiladas did you sell over there? None. And he kept reading his paper. He didn't give a shit. Right? It meant nothing. That, I mean, we just got $50,000 in free press, you know, and he couldn't
get back to work.
Yeah, get your ass back to work. Sell something. All right, we can quantify that.
What's the strangest or the furthest afield place from San Francisco or Mexico where you've seen a Tommy's margarita and it's kind of blown your mind that your cocktail spread that far?
Well, I took my mother. My mother is 85. She's going to be 86 next week. But about 3 years ago, we took her to South Africa for a wedding of a family friend. So I go up to this bar in Cape Town with my mother and I ask the bartender if he would make me two Tommy's margaritas, never having been there or never looking at the menu, and it wasn't on the menu. And the gentleman just said, sure. And my mother almost went white, like, how does this gentleman, I mean, halfway around the world, if not more, know about something that we're doing a million miles away in San Francisco? But it really hit home, honestly, the first time I was with my wife. I was working on Crystal Cruises, it's a luxury cruise line, and we had docked in Lisbon, it's about 7 or 8 years ago. And I had asked my friends in Portugal, hey, I'm gonna be in Lisbon, what's the best cocktail bar I should go to? And I was told, oh, everybody told me, go to Cinco Lounge, you gotta go to Cinco Lounge. So I go to this place purposely when they open, so it's quiet, and you will get a feel for the place. I ask for the cocktail menu, and they show me this really cool book, and I'm thumbing through it, and there's nothing that interested me at that particular moment. And so I'm with my wife, and I ask, and the bartender's there, he's a really young guy, and I go, hey, excuse me, can I just get a Tommy's margarita? And the kid looks at me and he goes, why do you want to drink a drink that you can get anywhere in the world? Let me make you something original. And my wife starts laughing. Like, this guy was like, I mean, what's this guy dissing me? I don't even know this guy. And so anyway, so I go, sure, please, go to it. And this gentleman got some peppers. He sautéed them. He muddled them. He made a beautiful, beautiful drink.
As long as it was good.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. And then so it obviously came time to pay. You know, I paid, and then I put my business card down, and I left. Yeah. And then I go, hey, we got to go back there. Those guys are cool. So I went back the next day, and the guy was there, and he apologized. I go, hey, no need to apologize. Thank you very much. But I thought that was pretty humbling, and someone would think that it was, you know, pretty ordinary.
Having focused Tommy's on 100% agave tequila, Julio narrowed its focus further to supporting tequilas that are distillery-owned and operated rather than contract-distilled, which is something I discussed in the Australian context with Kathleen Davies of Nip of Courage back in Season 2 of this podcast.
Distillery-owned and operated is critical. If you have the guts, the balls, to go put money in infrastructure and believe in what you do, it's a completely different level than testing the waters by... Why don't I start a gin brand and find a gin distiller and give him or her a recipe and let's see if it goes okay? When you decide to put a brick down and then you decide to buy a stone oven or an autoclave, you buy a fermentation tank, you buy a pot still, I mean, you're very vested and serious. And the minute you start hiring people and families and then thinking, oh my God, I have a little business, and not only am I responsible for my livelihood, but I'm now responsible for the livelihood of all these people that I want to work for me. You are now truly vested. Contracted products, if the contractor's distillery burns down, the guy who contracted goes to that guy and says, I hope you had fire insurance, and he finds another person to sell him or her juice. If you're selling the profile of a particular product, if someone else makes it, even if it's with your recipe, it tastes differently because of the water, because of the yeast, because of the size of the fermentation tank, because of the area that it's being fermented on, because of the size of the distillation still, because of the material of the pot still, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So, you know...
And you have to trust that they're telling you everything true about how they are making it as well.
100%. And honestly... I think that's another issue. When you contract, you know, most people deal in fair ways, but you don't have ultimate control.
And is having those sorts of principles become even more important in recent decades with more money coming into the category and celebrities being associated with brands and all those sorts of things?
Well, to me it does, because don't get me wrong, I love the fact that celebrities want every kind of whatever imaging and branding, but it's also about having a business that doesn't last 5 years, that doesn't last 10 years, that lasts a couple of generations, right? And that is part of a community. We've seen phenomenal business examples of people start brands of tequila and cash out unbelievably well, right? And more power to them and God bless them. But I wish some of those people would care a little bit more about the community and lay roots down, and you know, if they have such a great idea and a great vision, they should be able to do that as well.
100% agave is an important thing for people to select to know that they're getting a decent product, but it's not everything. What are the other things that you need to know about what you're buying to get a good quality tequila?
Well, so 20 years ago, we would tell everybody, look, if it says 100% agave, you're totally good. But today, there's a new series of things going on in the industry, and big tequila, in order to spread tequila where they want to spread it, in order to spread it at a price point that they can spread it at, has now had to make tequila in arguably new ways, right? So, you know, the evolution of tequila from, say, cooking in the ground, like a lot of artisanal and ancestral mezcals, to cooking in oven, to then cooking in autoclave, which was introduced by the Sauzas, to be more efficient and faster, to then using roller mills instead of taonas, and then using diffusers. Well, that's been a big difference. So, you know, if for 500 years people have been taking steam or direct fire to hydrolyze agave, well, it was a monumental leap in economies of scale, not for the better, in my opinion, to use acids to hydrolyze agave, right? And unfortunately, no one will tell you that they do that, right? But the way you get a tequila that's $20 and one that's $40 is usually the cheap one is made with acid, right? Which is faster, cheaper, 40% more efficient, right? So if you can, instead of using 8 kilos of agave to make a liter of tequila, I mean, naturally, you can use 5. You can save money and charge less. But there's a consequence in taste and in aromatics. Now, once you start oak aging those, you can cover things up. But if you take the unaged tequilas, one made with a diffuser, one made naturally like Patron, it's a night and day, right? Cooked agave needs to smell richer, rounder, sweeter. And products used or hydrolyzed with acid smell almost malty, slightly grainy, quite neutral, right? And again, it is tequila and it's 100% agave tequila, but it's, you know, tequila is all about the raw material, right? And that's why, on another note, no one in tequila distills the 80% ABV and above. We're not trying to make neutral spirit like everybody else. All right, we're trying. I mean, you're crazy to distill at 55% ABV when, if your job is to make alcohol, you can distill higher and make more alcohol. But why do people do that? To try to preserve the integrity of agave.
Yeah, I know you've got a really busy schedule in Australia, so thanks so much for taking the time, James, for an interview. It's an honor.
Oh, thank you. And you got to let me know how we can tell people in America about the podcast.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.